This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. We are joined today by a technology company. We're joined by Kelly Zimmerman, the CRO from Brightloom. Kelly, why don't you say hello to our audience, tell them a little bit about yourself, and then we can talk a little bit about what Brightloom does for brands that are out there.
You bet. Hello, everybody. Happy New Year. Yes. My name is Kelly Zimmerman. I am the president and acting CEO of Brightloom. Brightloom is a customer data platform that really focuses on allowing marketers to get, obtain, and execute around data-driven marketing strategies. We work with brands of all sizes. We started our mission to really bring brands and customers closer together several years ago. A lot of our founders and ideals come from restaurateurs, chief digital officers, CEOs of other brands that were very successful in developing not only loyalty programs, but also data-driven digital strategies. So excited to share more today.
I love it. I love it. I didn't realize I was getting, I thought you were the CRO. That's what the note said. Now I get to talk to the big boss.
It changes every day.
It changes. Well, I know. We just did a reorg after the first of the year myself, and I was having to introduce myself on a call earlier. I'm like, what is my title now? I don't even remember. But so I actually introduced myself with the old title and then the new title right after that.
Keeps the day interesting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and I think like with most companies, you know, we do what it takes to take care of people. So Kelly, the CDP is a word that's kind of gotten thrown around quite a bit lately, but I do think that restaurateurs and restaurant brands have been, I don't want to say underserved but underserved from the idea of CDP. But for those that in our audience that don't know what CDP means, can you define CDP and what that means? And then let's talk about, you know, kind of the what and the why, because I think it's a really, really powerful idea if in fact people can get implemented and get it to the place where you guys have gotten it to.
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. I actually like to refer to it even a little bit differently in the sense I think of it as customer data management. What a CDP really is defined as is taking in a bunch of customer data across things like point of sale systems, operational systems, marketing systems, bringing it together and really helping brands create, I would say, a customer profile, a way in which they can recognize and understand their customers. In addition to that, you know, it's allowing them to optimize, you know, as things change and evolve, you know, remove duplication in the data, you know, all the things that really cause bad data. A CDP is there to transform and ensure that it actually is good data. At Brightloom, we really think of it being more of a customer data management platform in the sense of you have all this customer data, but how do we help manage it for the role of the marketer? The person that's in charge of growing the business, increasing, you know, let's say the frequency, the loyalty of their customer base. How do we make that data really actionable and quite frankly, interesting, right, for the marketer in that position?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think as I've done my own personal research on CDP and just kind of this utopia of marketing, it's always interesting to me because restaurants are a unique element because they're not like e-commerce. They're not even general retail. The transactions oftentimes are very quick. You've got to get in and out. Figuring out who your customer is and understanding who they are is always been a challenge. And then tying them together in a platform that allows you to have actionable data is also really critical. Because I've asked the question, it's like, why does Amazon and Facebook and Google know so much about me? Because I give it to them. I give it to them all day long, but that doesn't happen in the restaurant. Nobody walks up to me and says, hi, Jeremy, you make X amount of dollars and you are married to X and you have X amount of children and you live in this zip code. But Facebook has that information about me. Google has that information about me. Amazon has that information about me. Visa has that information about me. You know, Bank of America and Chase and everybody else, because I've given it to them. Talk to me a little bit about how and why you think that is. And I guess, where do you guys go to get that data? You know, I've joked with my kids even. I have a very true story. I was traveling with my son for a college visit over the summer, and he needed to turn in a homework assignment, you know, for summer school. And so he logged out of my Google account and logged into his own Google account and then gave my laptop back to me. And I freaked out because I got on my screen and I'm like, this is not my laptop. Like, what happened? Because it totally changed. But I think it's very different than the way we experience restaurants. Talk to me a little bit about how CDP and how you guys capture that data. How do you capture who's coming into the brand and understanding that? Because I do believe part of it is identifying who that guest is so that you can appropriately talk with them the way that they need to be talked to.
Yeah. You know, it's a really good point. I mean, I always, on behalf of the restaurants we serve, I always study the retail space, right? I actually have some experience in my previous life in retail because they're way ahead of most restaurateurs. I think, you know, for restaurateurs, really, until the days and age of COVID, right, and creating a digital footprint for every customer, you know, they just didn't have the ability to, you know, people weren't buying their products online, most likely, right? They weren't. And so they couldn't even get to the data to even try and think about how do I use it, right? It was all about how do I ensure they have a really good experience when they walk into my location and they leave going, I want to come back tomorrow, maybe with, right? Today's totally different. And I think where, you know, loyalty programs are such a leading indicator as to where I think this is all going to go. CDP in mind, you know, how do you continue to focus on your most loyal customers? I mean, the thing I tell every brand every chance I can, is that the top 5% of your customer base is really driving your business.
Yep.
And
the majority of your profit is the worst part. You know, not only the top line sales, but better than 80% of your profit comes from that top 20%, as you know from the data.
Right. And so, you know, a lot of restaurants go out and buy these big CDPs, right? But I'm like, but is it giving you the answers you really need? Do you know what those most loyal customers prefer? Do you know what food, merchandise, what locations they go into? Do you care do you understand how they move the needle, you know, in your engagement? Do they like free things? Do they not? Do they like swag? You know, how do you really, I would say, surgically dissect certain segments of your customers to ensure that you're really operating around them in a way that they prefer? And I think that's when brands, especially in the restaurant space, really do that well. You know, that's when you see them really succeed and, you know, the fan base for those relationships just grows.
So
at Brightloom, I know you had asked me about what data do we, you know, intersect with. We take point of sale system data, marketing data, and loyalty program data. So we, you know, interact with, you know, most of the common platforms out there today to bring that data together and really create, you know, insights and segments based on the things that our brands and care about as it relates to their customers.
Yeah. So talk to me a little bit more about that, because I think that there's, I mean, even defining what a loyalty package is, because I think that even loyalty, I don't want to say has a bad name. There's different types of loyalty, and a Starbucks loyalty package is not going to look the same as a Ruth Chris loyalty package. Ruth Chris has a very different value proposition. I'm not going to Ruth Chris every day like I might at a Starbucks. And so Starbucks loyalty looks different than loyalty at a destination place that you're going on your anniversary or you're going on your birthday or you're going for a business dinner. Talk to me a little bit about how you guys define loyalty as a package, not necessarily loyalty as an idea.
Yeah. I love what you're saying, because I'm completely there with you. I've even been in situations where I've questioned why brands that we're working with have a loyalty program, because for me, it just doesn't make any sense. It's very expensive. They're giving away things to their most loyal customers that are going to come anyway. Yep. You know, why? They're just opening the app to see what the coupon is and then they're registering it.
Yep.
You're just giving away free stuff. And so I think of loyalty, you know, for every brand it's going to be different, to your point, based on kind of the RFM analysis we tend to look at, which is the recency, frequency, and monetization. You know, so whether you have a loyalty program or not, we like to dissect it kind of based on various tiers within that to know who your most loyal customers are, and then those who are progressing. And then the program, right, might be giving away, you know, offers or promotions or points. It might be giving them convenience factors, you know, like online ordering and mobile, you know, for the more frequent, you know, like coffee shops, et cetera. But then for sit downs, right, that loyalty program may be more like a membership program, right, where people are signing up for something that might give them a better seat when they come in, or faster service, or, you know, free bread with their meal. So, you know, we, through the data, right, really help brands understand what is the right strategy. If they've got one, is it working? What needs to change? If they don't have one, like, let's make sure you put the right strategy in place to optimize, you know, not only your profit, but the customer experience.
Well, and Kelly, the one thing I'm gonna go back to, and we talked a little bit about it, is COVID has changed. COVID has changed what people expect from a brand. COVID has changed the way people interact with a brand. COVID has changed even what consumers' expectations are of brands. Talk to me a little bit about how, I mean, and I will say, you know, back to your point, I'm a member of Landry's loyalty program because I happen to have four children, and getting a table for six on a Friday night is a pain in the ass. There's no two ways about it. And so why do I pay the $100 to get part of their loyalty program and I get $75 back? So it really only, I get to the top of the wait list. I don't have to worry about going into one of their brands on a Friday night. It's just the way it works. And I'm paying for that convenience. They now know who I am and they know my frequency. They happen to be a client of ours. I happen to have gone into their user conference last year and they were like, oh, you haven't been in lately. And I'm like, yeah, you probably shouldn't know that, but you do, because at the end of the day, back to the data. In that same vein, I think the way people interact with brands has changed. I think that understanding that some people interact with your brand because they're buying, you know, they're a pharmaceutical rep and they're always buying food for the doctors that they're bringing it into, or they're catering. They're, you know, there's other people that only do takeout. There's people. Talk to me a little bit about how you guys segment that data and understand how to educate restaurateurs. Because even pre-show, we talked about data is great, but if it's not actionable data that anybody can do anything with, none of it matters. Talk to me a little bit about that segmentation and helping brands and marketers understand those segments. Because again, going back to retail, they know my wife is a mother of four, lives in a middle upper class neighborhood, drives this kind of car. I mean, they know all of that stuff about us at Amazon and Google, but restaurateurs oftentimes are in the dark and they don't understand how brands interact, nor do they know how to segment their customers. Talk to me a little bit about how Brightloom and just kind of CDPs in general can help with that.
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I think I'll answer one thing you said, which is I think why, you know, there's a big reason why brands haven't done this as much as they should. It's just they don't have, you know, to do this well, you have to have, you know, a team of data scientists, data analysts, data engineers. You have to be pretty savvy, right? And brands just don't have that skill set typically in-house. So they should be leaning on providers like a CDP or Brightloom to help them organize and canonicalize that data. I mean, we spent 3 years as a software company, right, developing ways in which we can develop these kind of fingerprint footprints, right, around data to ensure that it can be rinsed, repeated, and acted upon quickly. It's a pretty heavy load to ask any brand to take on themselves. And I would say the way we've really found it to be successful, because, you know, for one, the data changes, right? To your point, I mean, if you look at customers 2 years ago to today, most brands, they'll look different, right?
Uh-huh.
Even when you look at the data that brands had 2 years ago versus now, you know, third-party data, you know, still is not as accessible as we like it to be, right? But there are ways which you can start to really unpack these customers maybe that you don't see coming through in your current data sets. So we, you know, our process that we like to follow, you know, really is kind of a, what we call the digital flywheel, which is we bring in data, right? And we help the brand set a baseline around the data.
Okay.
Once they've set the baseline and have determined what strategies and things they're thinking about, what needles do they want to move? What aha moments do they have that they kind of want to test even and experiment with? Through that process, then they create their strategy. They build segmentation, right, through our tool, the way they need it to the guardrails and kind of the implementation, if you will, of the strategy. And then they execute. And then what our models do is when the data comes back around, it assesses not only the performance, it adjusts, but then it really proactively tells the brand what to do the next time they go through this wheel. And at first, we do it pretty hands-on with brands, especially brands with a lot of data who maybe don't know as much as they would like to. So we really take a very hands-on approach. The idea is eventually the wheel just runs and flies on its own, and a brand can kind of orchestrate and adjust and be really athletic as the data changes, where the segments just happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that takes a while, right, to get there. The thing that I think is always surprising, at least from our standpoint, is that you can get to that first step of understanding your data in weeks now, right? Yep. It used to be months or years. Now it's weeks. And so I sometimes don't understand why brands at least just don't take that one first step to assessing their current customer, trying to find the aha moments and then adjusting. And I'll share a story with you. I think it's a fascinating story. It's one of my favorite. We were working with a pretty good-sized coffee chain through this process. And one of their locations, they noticed they had a run on oat milk. I mean, they just couldn't, they were for, in, you know, our data set that's proactively dishing up interesting insights based on how the data is changing, all of a sudden oat milk became, it just jumped as far as revenue on that product. So they looked deeper and they realized in certain regions, other competitors had run out of oat milk. And so they launched a massive marketing campaign in those regions around oat milk. And I mean, I think they still benefit from that today, because they created, you know, a more loyal customer base. They brought them in, they gave them a great experience. They tailored their experience based on, you know, their preference. And sure enough. So I think that's a really good story. And had they not gone through that process, right, in organizing the data, assessing it, and then having these mechanisms that proactively communicate to them when something's changing, you know, they probably would have gone on their merry way and maybe would have seen, I wonder why that revenue went up, you know, a quarter later, which is too late to react. So I think that's a really good example of how it can work really, really well.
Well, and I think that, I mean, that one, I love that example, but I'd love for you to give me another example on the opposite side. So let's take a brand that might want to do an LTO or might want to do something that's unique to a value proposition where they're looking to get either new guests in or, you know, looking to get another loyal patron. Talk to me about what that looks like to try and say, my strategy is to drive X, you know, frequency, appetizer sales, liquor sales, what you know, you name it. There's a whole bunch of different brand strategies, but like that one was awesome because you were able to get the data and able to make some business decisions and understand why something happened. But it doesn't sound like there was an impetus from marketing or from loyalty or from the CDP to go drive that. They did make a business decision posthumously saying, oh, the competitors are running out of oat milk, so let's go capitalize on that. Flip that around that says, I'm really looking to hit the Valentine's Day holiday, which is coming up in a few weeks, or I'm looking to go hit Mother's Day, or, you know, whatever, you name it. You've been around doing this for a while. Talk to me a little bit about, I'm trying to drive some initiative that is out there with a supplier or out there with, you know, some product that we really want to turn over the next 60, 90, 120 days, over the next 6 months. Talk to me a little bit about what that might look like if I were a brand trying to drive some behavior from my guests on the flip side, and how I get attribution. Because what I've heard for so many years is they'll put an ad out there and they pray that people come in and interact with that brand. And, you know, the old adage is, you know, 50% of the marketing works. We just don't know what 50%, you know? And so it's like, but with data, you can know what 100% of where or high 90s of what percentage of it worked if you're doing it properly.
Yeah. You know, it's a good question. And I think I'll answer it by this example. I think often brands are often searching for the next cool thing, even as it relates to the holidays, right? Certainly, you know, it's become a well-known factor that you offer special things for the seasons and they create a lot of great, you know, interest and probably revenue. But there's also something to be said, right, about the standard things that people like. And I think what we often see in our data, take a look, just a latte as a very generic example, or, you know, a taco. I think brands often try and focus on creating all these interesting, you know, new things around it. But sometimes the staple of which they offer is the best thing they have. Mm-hmm. I can think of an example where a brand was really trying to, you know, find new products and create all this new and exciting momentum around new launches and all of those things. When we said your data is saying you just need to focus on the one thing that you're really good at. And when they did that, it actually changed their frequency pretty dramatically, you know? And so I think, you know, brands try and sometimes get too creative with the data. They're trying to search for the, you know, the one aha thing. And sometimes the thing that you do really, really well is the best thing you can put out there. Even if it's a holiday message, right? With the thing that, you know, people really like and what resonates with them.
I love that. So I have a very good friend of mine who's also in the restaurant business, and he will say to me, when you think of a brand, if I say the word Olive Garden to you, if that's a brand that you go to, or I say the word Cheesecake Factory to you, or I say the word Cheesecake Factory to you, I promise you, you think of two, maybe three menu items. And if you want that, then you consider going. And if you don't want that, then you don't go. So figure out what those two or three items are and advertise that, market that, create a reason to come have the Chinese chicken salad or the, you know, the avocado egg rolls or whatever those items are, because oftentimes that's what gets people into a place like Cheesecake Factory or the Olive Garden or Red Lobster or whatever it might be.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So I'm going to pivot here on you just a little bit. There's been a whole lot of chat about AI, machine learning, ChatGPT solving these problems. You know, I know that, you know, and I was talking to our CTO actually this week when we were in our NRF, and I was like, why so much now versus what it used to be? And he would share a story with me. And I'd love to know what your thoughts are now and where that's going in the future. But just he would share with me, he says, we built this algorithm about kitchen timing and what's causing the kitchen to have troubles with getting guest satisfied orders. What's dragging kitchen ticket times? And we loaded it up with like 3 years of data at a brand, you know, and we figured out that every time there was the miso salmon on this or whatever it was, it caused problems to the order. And the order was delayed. And I said, he goes, that took somebody 50 hours to build that algorithm to do that. He goes, 10 years ago, that would have taken somebody a year or a team of three for a year. Talk to me a little bit about the acceleration of machine learning and AI and how it's going to help with these CDP platforms to create suggestive things that used to take a data scientist days, if not weeks, to go mill through the data to be able to help people with this. Because it does end up coming down to how much data do I have and how can I make that decision quicker? And then layering on top of that ideas like this. Talk to me a little bit about where that's at and where that's going, not just for Brightloom, but for the industry in general.
Yeah. You know, I'll say the industry still struggles, right, with giving away access to data. There still are a lot of areas, right, in certain sides of the business that still keep data pretty closed to the rest of the world. And so we're always trying to break through those barriers. But in general, I would say, you know, my own interpretation of why, you know, speed and acceleration in this, for one, there's a lot more people that can have done it, right? The industry just has more experience and there are people and platforms now that have developed all of the mechanisms to make it easier. I'd also say that, you know, brands, in order for them to genuinely scale, right? Like, how can you scale across all this data, right? Without machine learning? I mean, you can't. And
it's
so
it's impossible.
It's impossible, exactly. And so, you know, even like at Brightloom, some of our founders came from Amazon and Starbucks, right? Who developed some of the early, I would say, capabilities around this. You know, and then once partnered with like us, Brightloom, we can then accelerate all of that thinking and do it in a very, you know, easy and technical fashion. So I think data is still hard to get to. I don't think this industry has fully, you know, broken down all the barriers there. But I think the experience, the expertise, and a lot of the thought leaders who were early on are now, you know, developing a lot of really interesting things through platforms like Brightloom that are making it a lot more accessible to brands.
So I would say that I 100% agree with you on the data front. We happen to run a point of sale company and our philosophy has always been it's the customer's data to have and to exploit and to use for their own business purposes. But many of our competitors don't think that. What do you think that what's the reason behind that? Because we have our own philosophy. It's on our website. It's what we believe to our core that says you captured the data. We also own it and we are going to do what we want with it. But if you want it or need it, whether it be for your loyalty program, for Brightloom, for your CDP, we believe that you should be, have access to it in an accessible way. As long as you're not a bad actor, you're doing it, you know, appropriately and following the guidelines of, you know, data privacy and whatnot. Why do you think the others struggle with that, including the third-party delivery companies? Because they're probably the worst of any of them. And you know, while it's a necessity to have these third-party companies, I just talked to a brand earlier this week who says 60% of their sales are going out via third-party delivery. That means 60% of their customers, they don't have the level of data that they want or need unless they get creative about the way they go about that. Is it because they want to compete with Brightloom? Is it because they think that they're going to do something with it? Like, why do they make it so hard to get to what I believe is the customer's data?
Yeah, I mean, I think they see it as it's the value, right, that they continue to drive, which is we know your customer, right? And quite frankly, I think a lot of the third parties look at themselves as they do actually own the customer, right? And so we'll tell you what you need to know, but you don't need to worry about the customer. And they've got their own mechanisms and data science, right? Trying to help brands drive activity through that way. So competitors, maybe, right? But I honestly think it's they see data as the king and therefore it's giving them an immense amount of value. I do see it changing though. You know, we're actually working with Square, you know, which is kind of a more downmarket POS, but we're actually starting to get access to third-party data through Square. I know as a mechanism, we can actually start to identify, right, the customer. And if we have the access points to other pieces, we can kind of synergize that data together and start to create a profile. But I think third parties will change. I think, you know, we're starting to see it a little bit and being a little bit more open around that. I'll tell you outside of third party, what we have seen with platforms that aren't as open is quite frankly, they built technology, right, that was 10 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. Some of them, I truly believe they just don't have the capability to. And you need to evolve their infrastructure in order to make it more readily accessible. And they better hurry up, right? Because I see, I feel like in the last year especially, so many brands change platforms that they were working with because of it.
Yep.
And so they will die on the vine, I think, if they don't kind of get with the program and act more open and give access through things like APIs.
Yeah, no, and it's interesting that you say that because, again, our platform's only been around for 10 years, but I would say that we started with that data first mentality that said, give people the ability to get to their data because it is their data and allow them to exploit it to make better business decisions. Because collecting the data without good business decisions means nothing. We've talked about that for a whole conversation. And I do know that some people are not the best actors. The other piece that I think I think you shared, and I think it's kind of interesting, is that a lot of these technology companies, they want to get paid to get access to that data, and they want to create these firewalls in between that make it challenging. And to your point, marketing oftentimes runs a lot of the decisions that even IT has to make within restaurant brands. And so they're going to lose out if they don't figure out how to do it. And I do applaud those that are trying to normalize. I know that the group at HT is trying to figure out how to normalize the data specs so that everybody's, you know, playing on an equal playing field and saying, you know what, you got to do this because the brands are going to expect it.
That's right.
So Kelly, I'm going to flip topics here just for a little bit, because we've talked about the back-end data and figuring out who the guests are. Talk to me a little bit about what you think the future of those engagements are when a guest comes into a brand. You know, I've had these ideas of, as you know, scary as it might be, but it happens. They know whether it's the beacon on your phone or facial recognition through a camera or through Facebook check-ins or through geo data. They know a lot more about who you are than, you know, through the app that you've logged in with. They know where they're geofencing you. And when I pull into the parking lot at this brand that I have a loyalty app on my phone for, it's amazing how often I get a push notification that says, come in. Talk to me a little bit about what that looks like, because I think, like, what's the benefit, not just to a restaurant and to a CDP, but even to the consumer? And why do we need to educate the world that says you're going to get a better guest experience, no different than I was bellyaching about my son logging into his Google account and how his experience was different than mine. I think all too often, if you can get that digital Cheers experience when you go into a brand that it knows who you are, knows what you want, knows when you want it, knows when you want to interact with that, it's going to end up delivering a better guest experience. Talk to me a little bit about where you think that's at now and where do you think it's going?
Yeah. I think, you know, there's a lot of really interesting innovations, right, that are coming out every day. It's funny because we actually have been approached by several companies that locate, you know, based on things like, you know, satellite and cell phone pings to see if they'd like to partner with us, right, where we can help use our data and our platform to, you know, connect with that user quite quickly and give them the right recommendation, right, as far as what the data we know that they, what they like. Mm-hmm. I think we are, however, in a really interesting place because, you know, data is also in security and a lot of the things, you know, that have changed. As far as security is concerned, you know, how much data, how much Big Brother watching, right, are consumers willing to do? And I think we're still kind of working through that. How much does a customer want you to know versus give you the optionality to know? But I think what you're saying, you know, if you think about, let's call it the Starbucks, you know, online mobile ordering, right, which was clearly cutting edge when it first came out. I mean, people said that wasn't going to be an option, right? Like my favorite story is hearing like, that's never going to work. Who's going to do that, right?
Well, who's going to pay $5 for a cup of coffee? You know, 30 years ago, people would have said, who's going to pay $5 for a cup of coffee? And now people spend it every single day, right?
Yeah, now it's 10.
Yes.
But now, you know, so that I think what you're getting at is going to be the future state of that convenience factor, which is you'll opt into, you know, I bring my girls to dance every Friday and I'm always at, we always go to this location. We always order the same thing. Like, how do you just make that one click order ready? That the technology's there.
Yes.
It's just a matter, I think, of working through the mechanics of how to get people interested and okay with it, that a lot of platforms are still working through.
Well, and I think it's interesting that you say that because my mother-in-law is in her 70s and we'll be talking about a dog treats around the house. And then she is baffled that her Facebook app shows her dog treats that are showing up in her Facebook feed. So it happens all day, every day. But for some reason, e-commerce and social media has gotten away with it. Mm-hmm. Whereas people think it's creepy if Target's doing that. You know, everybody's heard the story, or a lot of people have heard the story of the lady that got the diaper advertisement, you know, at Target before she even told her family that she was pregnant because she was taking pregnancy tests and Target knew that she was buying pregnancy tests. Everybody's heard that, but they think that that's creepy. But Facebook can listen to everything that we're talking about right now. And, you know, when I say Facebook, it could be any of the social media platforms. And then they start giving me advertisement for dog treats because I talked about dog treats on the podcast. Why are consumers surprised that social media is doing this and then they get offended when brick and mortar retailers do that? What do you think that is?
Yeah. I mean, I think what you're hitting on a little bit is maybe just the transformation of who, you know, the generations to. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, and I'm not part of Gen Z by any stretch, but I like the fact that someone's going to proactively tell me, right? Yep. What I need or what I'm talking about, right? Even vacations, right? Like that happens to me all the time. We talk about going somewhere and then I'm starting to get ads. Thank you, right? Thank you for giving me an offer that might make me, you know, hit your hotel while we're there. I think it's a convenience factor. I think what will change the game for, you know, the broader masses is when it's actually even marketed that way, right? I think so many brands, it's a secret, right? And therefore, because they're not being more upfront about what they're actually trying to do, I think it creates more, you know, chaos than it's worth. But I think it's as the generations have more and more buying power, right? And we see that shift, I think it will become more, less and less of an issue.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I've got younger siblings that are 15 years younger than me and they don't care about any of that stuff. And I'm like, well, do I really need them to know all of this? But then again, I get frustrated when my Facebook feed looks like my wife's Facebook feed or whatever. Cause I'm like, this isn't my Facebook feed. Like why? I want my stuff. Yeah. I will also say that those social media and quite frankly, advertisers are getting so good that there was a lot of impulse purchases this past Christmas that probably wouldn't have been there had it not been for that advertising, where I'm like, I don't really need this, but I purchased it because they hit me, you know, 6, 7, 8 times on my feed and you know, how many ever times it was. So where is it going, Kelly? Where is all of this going? Like, you know, talk to me a little bit about how restaurateurs should be thinking about the future of CDP, should be thinking about, you know, I'm guessing, you know, unless you're a very large brand, most don't have a CDP strategy. Most don't have a CDP technology. They don't have all of this that you guys are going after. You know as well as I do that those big brands have it, and they're using it to compete against those smaller brands.
Yep.
Is it going to get normalized down to the single unit operator? Is it going to get normalized down to the place where, you know, 5 and 10 unit chains that are local in a region know who their guests are and know what they're ordering and know how to get back to them if there's a problem and know what's going to resonate when they put a new menu item on the list? Is that where it's going? Is it going to where, you know, dog eat dog and you know, just the top people that have it are going to just continue to squeeze out the Walmart effect in the small towns? You know, talk to me a little bit about where you see it going over the next 5, 10, 15 years as the data becomes more available and these tools become something that people really are going to be able to use, in a really powerful way.
Yeah, I love this question because it's quite frankly something we talk about a lot. And you know, I'll say this: I think that the power, right, of data and using this data to really give a unique experience is going to be the best thing any small restaurateur can activate upon. The great thing about, you know, a smaller, you know, more, let's say, local chain or restaurant is that they have the ability, right, to make quick decisions. They can actually enact typically pretty quickly if they know what they need to do, right? So many of these brands just say, tell me what to do. I'll go do it right now, right? Just give me the tool and I'll make it happen. You know, some of these larger brands, you know, even when you read the headlines, they're struggling because, you know, they are so big. And I think sometimes making change and adjusting and being athletic as the environment changes around them is harder.
Yes.
So we're putting a lot of emphasis, I would say, in kind of the more SMB market and really helping those restaurateurs. And we see, you know, they typically are a little bit younger in generation, these founders and CEOs. And they're excited to take on technologies like TikTok and Instagram. And they're excited to explore new things, even like Web3, right?
Yep.
They're on the cutting edge, I think, of this technology. And if they can have tools that aren't expensive, which they have been, and have the capabilities to make it really easy for them to act upon, they will take off. And I think we'll see them have more and more impact in this industry over the next 5 years.
Well, and I think, I say it often on the show because I think part of why I love having people, you know, thought leaders on the show is because there are so many people that are, if they're not already doing it, they're thinking about it. And I would strongly suggest all of our listeners get to a place where I love what you guys are doing, love the product you have. You guys have got a dozen or so competitors in the space. So if you're not using Brightloom, you have to be using someone to get this data to be able to go there. Because at the end of the day, I am passionate about restaurants and I'm passionate about restaurant technology because I want that local restaurant to be there when my kids grow up. I want them to be able to go have you know, food with a friend and be able to go enjoy an experience just like I did. And I think that if you don't, you end up, you know, losing out. If you're not using data to make better business decisions, if you're just, you know, and again, all too often, even you look at all of the shows, the Gordon Ramsay goes in and tries to fix a failing restaurant. And it's like, you've got this stuff in the freezer that's been there for 7 years. Why do you still have it on the menu? Nobody's eating it. Or, you know, you don't have new customers coming in. And it's like, people are not thinking this way. Oh, it always worked this way. So we're always going to do it that way. It doesn't work anymore. And I think, you know, you guys are evidence exactly of that because you guys have the capability to solve so many of those problems. How does somebody learn more about what you guys are doing? Like, talk to me a little bit about what engagement might look like. If I'm one of those restaurateurs out there and I'm like, Brightloom, need to have it, figure out where to get going. What does that engagement look like? What can they expect when they engage with you, your team, you know, as they move into trying to solve this?
Yeah. So I'd first tell them to go to brightloom.com. And we have, you know, we actually have right now an offering from our website, which is called a data health report. It's something we came up with last year after going through this process with so many brands, big and small, realizing they had no clear understanding of even the health of their data as it sat, right? Where the gaps were. And even have helped them update and think differently about the platforms and systems they're using today, right? Before they start a journey of even getting better and more complex down this path. So, you know, I'd say go to our website. If you think a data health report might be a great first step, sign up for one, right? A team will quickly engage with you and we'll take you down about an hour workshop session with us where we'll connect your data and we'll give you a report on really where your data sits. I would say that's a really easy next step that everyone should be taking, you know, whether you even have solved this problem or not, or you think you have. Mm-hmm. It can never hurt to know more.
I love it. I love it. Because to what we've talked about for the last 40 minutes, it's like it's the data is there to be used and exploited to make better business decisions. So if you're not using it, ultimately becomes a really expensive cash register out front. Or a really expensive way to message your people and get people in the door. But if you're not using the data to make decisions, then ultimately it's you're underutilizing the capabilities that you have there.
Yeah. And just one other thing I'll highlight, because we do believe both in the SMB as well as the enterprise. We work with some of the biggest brands out there, and now we've come to market with an SMB offering. And so I just want to set that stage that we've got the capabilities to go really deep and really, you know, data science driven. We also have easy, lightweight options for brands of all sizes to quickly get going within days, right? Hours, not weeks,
love it.
Or years. So
I love it. Well, you're speaking my language, because we all love those small brands. And quite frankly, when I'm traveling, especially, I hit those big brands a lot more often than I do the smaller brands, because I know what I can, you know, like and trust when I'm out on the road. Well, Kelly, I can't thank you enough for the education that you offer to our audience. To our audience out there, guys, we know that you guys have got lots of choices of who to listen to out on the interwebs as it relates to podcasts. So we appreciate you guys spending some time with us. Kelly, thank you so much for your time. And to our audience, make it a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.